Welcome to the MacCast for Christian Creatives, as we seek to bring the church world and the art world a little closer together. I'm glad to have you here today. My name is Matt Anderson. There is a phrase that started in the Christian world, but has bled into our entire society. And the phrase is, living my best life. Now, that phrase means pretty much a thousand different things, depending on who is saying it at the moment. Because sometimes those phrases can be taken really out of context, and it can be really an excuse to avoid responsibility and push people away. You know, some guy could say, you know, hey, I want to live my best life, so I'm going to leave you and the kids, you know, and supposedly that's okay. Certainly isn't. But even in Christian circles, it can sometimes be about having stuff and all things financial and material because, you know, we're the king's kids. And life almost becomes all about what happens here. I like to joke that I've been tempted to write a book called Your Best Life Later. Because for me, heaven is where our best life happens. That's where everything pays off. This world, it's not our home. And I think the most frustrated Christians that I know are the ones who are trying to have heaven on earth. They're trying to have their mansion here. And again, I'm not saying that financial success is an evil thing. There are people that God blesses that way to be a blessing. But I'm talking about people who believe that's sort of their God-given right, or that they're somehow entitled to it. And they're trying to just have everything here that's really meant for later. So with that as a backdrop, my question today is, what biblically is our best life here on earth? And again, I'm going to specifically address Christian creatives, but this really hits on everybody, because to me, our quote, best life, whatever that is, it is living out God's will for our lives, period. It is following Christ and not being altered, not being taken off course, not being affected by the opinions of other people around us. It almost comes to a point of saying, I know what he has asked me to do. I am going to do it, even if no one else understands. So since we are talking to Christian creatives, those of you who devote yourself to artistic and creative work, you probably already know what that means. But I want to read a scripture to get us in motion here, and it's from 1 Peter chapter 4. These are the first five verses. Peter writes to Christians who are going through trial and persecution. That's who he's writing. He writes, "So then, since Christ suffered physical pain, you must arm yourselves with the same attitude he had and be ready to suffer too." That would not preach in a lot of churches. He goes on, "For if you have suffered physically for Christ, you have finished with sin." Verse 2 says, "You won't spend the rest of your lives chasing your own desires, but you will be anxious to do the will of God. You have had enough in the past of the evil things that godless people enjoy, their immorality and lust, their feasting and drunkenness and wild parties, and their terrible worship of idols. Of course, your former friends are surprised when you no longer plunge into the flood of wild and destructive things they do. So they slander you. But remember that they will have to face God, who stands ready to judge everyone, both the living and the dead." That is a powerful scripture. I want to read verse 2 again, because it really dovetails so nicely into our discussion. Verse 2, "You won't spend the rest of your lives chasing your own desires, but you will be anxious to do the will of God." Now, again, I want to say that desires are not necessarily an evil thing, because as we delight ourselves in the Lord, Scripture says, He will give us the desires of our heart. When we are meshed together, when we are entwined with the Lord, what He wants is going to be what we want. It won't be this kicking and screaming thing. And so I firmly believe that in order to truly follow God's will for our lives, we have to be prepared for two things, especially if you're an artist. Be ready for two things: to be, number one, misunderstood, and then secondly, to struggle. I remember about 11 years ago when I decided to devote myself to being full-time a writer and speaker, or at least hopefully eventually full-time writer and speaker. And I was talking to someone who also is creative, and I said, "So what advice can you give me along the way?" And they told me, "Matt, you better be willing to change your lifestyle to accommodate, because there is probably no way this was going to bring in the income you once had. Are you prepared to make the adjustments necessary?" And of course, in the moment, I'm like, yeah, sign me up. Wherever you send me, I'll go, Lord, you know, kind of thing. And I meant that. But my experience matched that completely. I mean, I remember the early days, which are always exciting. Anytime you're starting a new thing, you're thinking of branding and logos and website domains, business cards, you know, all those things we do that get us excited and make us feel really official. We feel all grown up and kind of ready to tackle the world with our art. Look out, world, here we come. And then reality sets in. And we realize people aren't as excited about our product as we are. That's a hard thing to face. I mean, part of us knows that, but boy, when the reality hits and the money isn't coming in, which means artists and creatives have to do something most of us really stink at, and that's sales. And most creative people cannot stand to sell. I'm like, just put me in a little corner and let me just write stuff and someone else will just buy it somewhere. I don't know. And that's where the struggle begins. Because in that need, maybe we were the major breadwinner, and now we're bringing in dinner rolls. And I only mean one, not a pack of eight. And our spiritual enemy pounces on this and accuses us, because that's what he does. And he tells us, "You are so messing up your life right now. What kind of an idiot does what you're doing? Look at the financial jeopardy you have put yourself in and the people around you." And when we're desperate, that starts to make sense. But I want you to hear me. If you're in that place today, you know the Lord has called you to spend the majority of your time doing creative and artistic things. I just want to remind you that our spiritual enemy will always oppose anything that is creative. Anything that glorifies the Lord, he will oppose it. That's because Satan cannot create. He can only taint. He can only pervert what's been created. He does not have that ability, and he hates anything creative, and especially that which glorifies God, and will oppose it as much as he can. I think there's a reason why most artists suffer financially. I don't think it's because of the system. It's against us, or because of capitalism, or whoever's in the White House. This is a spiritual matter. This is going directly against the grain of our spiritual foe. And during those seasons, when we're struggling, people who love us, people who want the best for us, they want us to have our best life now, right? They will tell us, hey, Matt, listen, hey, this whole like writing thing, this has been really cute. You know, it's been, yeah. And they kind of like pat you on the head. They do that little patronizing thing. Maybe it's time to kind of make some practical choices. And they did, they meant well. They weren't a tool of the enemy or anything like that. It was just they didn't want to see me suffer and struggle, if you want to call that suffering. They just don't want us to struggle anymore. They want us to be able to pay our bills, and so do we. But doing the will of God will often mean being misunderstood and also struggling. It comes with the territory of doing the will of God. It's really not an easy thing to fully fulfill God's will for our lives. And somewhere along the line, I don't know where it happened, but Christians somehow started to believe that the will of God meant reaching a place in life where we don't have to depend on Him anymore. I mean, can we just be honest? I see that as the prevailing thought in most evangelical churches, is that you need to get to a point spiritually, and we don't say this out loud, but we almost think if someone is struggling, that there must be something wrong with them. That, to have to beg and plead the Lord to pay your bills, oh my word, what kind of a life is that? I'll tell you what kind of life it is. It's the kind of life that develops perseverance and maturity. If we're not truly depending on the Lord in some way, we are missing it somewhere. If we're not taking risks, we are not following Jesus. I know that's harsh. Because as we follow Him, artist or not, maybe you've been asked to start a business. Maybe you left a high-paying job to work in the healthcare industry or be a teacher. He will put us in situations that test our faith and our belief. But James 1 tells us that the testing of our faith produces perseverance. So if we're not risking, no faith is required. Therefore, we're not living. Because without faith, Hebrews says, it is impossible to please God. So, fellow Christian artist, fellow creative, you need to hang in there. If you are truly following Christ, stay with it. Stay in that place of depending on the Lord, because that's the perfect place to be, because then He gets all the credit and I don't. So that when He comes through in the way that only He can, people will step back and say, wow, I guess God was in charge of that whole thing to begin with. And He's the one who gets the applause. Believe it or not, you are living God's will. He will come through for you. And that is as good as it gets in this life.
Tonight on PBS, a special front night undercover investigation unlike any other. At least until sweeps, when we will have a super-duper undercover investigation unlike any other. What made otherwise civil Americans turn into barbarians? How could a simple, everyday household item turn ordinary citizens into savages? In Role Reversal, Front Night investigates the toilet paper scandal of 2020 by utilizing a two-ply investigation. Who knew the coronavirus was coming, and who stands to profit from it? Through extensive research, interviews, and trolling on conspiracy websites, we track down the truth behind the great toilet paper shortage of America and trace its roots to the mastermind of it all, someone with the initials TP. Watch as we turn our cameras on suspects like Ty Pennington, Trey Parker of South Park, Tyler Perry, novelist Thomas Pynchon, and someone named Tiffany Pollard, as we demand they give an accounting of times and places. Front Night goes past the cottony surface to the cardboard tube beneath and that last toilet paper square attached that won't seem to budge. Watch as we get to the bottom of it all in Role Reversal, tonight on Front Night, only on PBS. Because we're much smarter than you.
I think if we're going to live out the will of God for our lives, to really walk that hard path that I think not enough people are walking, we cannot allow numbers to rule our lives. I want to tell you a story from my life. I'm a driver for a rideshare service. I've been doing that for a few years. I like to tell audiences that not only does it pay some bills, but it has given me sermon illustrations that I can use for the rest of my life. Here's one of those. About a year ago, I picked up a man in his 30s from the airport, and I was driving him downtown to a hotel. And he was in town for a family function. He mentioned that he had just flown in from Los Angeles to here in Cleveland. And I said, "Oh, what do you do in Los Angeles?" And he said, "Oh, I work for CBS." I said, "Wow, what do you do for CBS?" And he said, "I'm one of the people who decides what shows stay on the air." Okay, right now I just heard 80 of you go, "Ooh," right? Because that's how I felt when he said that. And I thought, wow, well, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And so I said, okay, so how does it work? How do all of you decide what shows stay on the air and which ones get canceled? And he goes, "Well, really, it's easy. It's just about numbers." And they look at the demographics and the number of people who are buying advertising and all these kinds of things that people like me can't understand. So I said, "Oh, okay." And so they just, when the numbers don't add up, they cancel the show. So I couldn't help myself. I said, "Have you ever canceled a show and really gotten some blowback from the American public for doing it?" And he didn't even have to think about it. He said, "Do you remember a show called Jericho?" And I said, "Yeah, I remember it. I didn't watch the show personally." I said, "What, wasn't that a summer show initially?" And he said, yeah, we put it on in the summer and it had incredible numbers. So we decided to give it a slot on the fall lineup. And then it didn't do so well. It got kind of crowded out by other shows and the numbers weren't there any longer. And so in March, we made the decision to pull the plug on the show. And there were still a few episodes in the can that they still had to air to finish out the season. And so they did that. Now, apparently, from what I'm told, this is what the executive told me. On the last episode of this show, the main character has the last line. And the last thing he says is, "Nuts." And that's the end of the show, I guess. Now, what he told me was, Americans responded by sending nuts in every form and fashion to CBS headquarters. I mean, they're sending pecans and macadamias and cashews like crazy. And it was so voluminous, I guess, that they decided to put the show back on the air. And something I pulled away from that little moment is, yeah, that's what happens when we only look at numbers. Numbers do not give the full picture. And right now with coronavirus doing what it's doing, and I think there's going to be a second wave after the physical threat is gone, I think there's going to be a much bigger financial wave that hits our country, maybe as big as the Great Depression. That's just my guess, okay? I'm not a prophet here. But I think we're going to have a lot of moments when we're looking at numbers. Those of you who are artists, it gets so easy to get mired in the numbers, and it can take away from your creativity because you're sitting there at night trying to figure out which bill to pay, the gas or the electric. I just want to remind you that the entire Bible is filled with stories in which numbers really didn't matter. When Gideon began with his humongous army of around 10,000 people, and God said, "Whoa, way too big, way too big." And he shrunk it down to 300 to battle a nation. And God's army won. We know the story from Jesus' life in which 5,000 men, not counting women and children, were following him around, and they were in a remote place and there was nothing for them to eat. And there was no food available except one kid who had 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus multiplied it, and there were 12 baskets full left over. Time and again in the Bible, God is over numbers. We are not going to do the will of God if numbers rule the day. I'm not saying we shouldn't be smart and wise financially. I'm not saying we should just go into massive debt because God will take care of it. Clearly not. But when we're being good stewards, when we're following biblical giving principles, sometimes the numbers still aren't going to work. And that puts us in that wonderful, remarkable place of saying, Jesus, I need you to come through big time. And I want you to know he is not put off by that. Every single time he will say, glad you asked. Because we know that everyone who asks receives. Everyone who seeks will find. Everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Stay in that place. I know we all want to get to that place where we don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. And God may send that to us at some point. But right now, here we are in the thick of it. There is something we must learn. We must learn trust. We must learn perseverance. We must believe that he really is good. We cannot live out the will of God and live out this thing he has for us on this earth without this. Embrace it. Don't look at yourself and say, I must be defective. Certainly don't look at God and say, you're not good. Hang in there and believe. It's not about numbers. It's about doing God's will and trusting him for the rest. And we appreciate you being a part of the Mattcast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. For more info, go to mattministry.com. Thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.